In a minute. Thank you, Pat. Welcome to the Sunday night There Is a Solution newcomer and returning members meeting of Overeaters Anonymous. Visit our website at oaontario.org, where you'll find this audio recording, additional podcasts, and a place to donate to keep this special service active. The opinions expressed are those of individual OA members and do not represent OA as a whole. Our speaker today is a compulsive overeater and a member who has at least 6 months of abstinence, has recovered through the directions in the Big Book, and maintains recovery on a daily basis. After the share, there will be time to make a comment or ask a question about the OA program or what the speaker has shared. Welcome, Lindsay, a compulsive overeater from New York.
Hi, all. I'm Lindsay from New York. So grateful to be here. Only 205 days I was sitting as a newcomer, lost, broken, desperate, confused, and just feeling like I didn't, not only did I not know how to receive a miracle, I didn't feel like I deserved a miracle. So to think that in 205 days, I'm sitting here talking, sharing how I received a miracle is truly just so exciting. I just hope that I can demonstrate through me what God can do, because God is amazing. This is not a Lindsay story. This is really a God story. So I'm just going to quickly share some photos since I have a little bit of time. This was me as a child, probably around the same age my daughter is now. Forgot my blonde hair that day. but I always had a smile on my face, and I'll talk in a few seconds about childhood and how that I'm not going to stay too long on childhood, but just that it was a very difficult time for me. And I really just regulated feeling accepted and feeling good enough by weight. So I just wanted to show you, you know, there were times I could get really skinny that would last a very short amount of time and I'd be white knuckling it. But I did feel like I achieved something. However, at what cost? I was discontented, miserable, restless. And like I said, it would last such a millisecond before I was back in the food and rapidly gaining the weight back. And I just have a phone that is full of these photos because I was constantly taking day one photos. Like that was going to be my actual day one. I even had this joke with my brother that like we would call each other every morning and say day one, day one. And so many times I'd say, no, 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 but this time I really mean it. I know we were joking, but this time is really going to be day one. And the photos just progressively show me gaining more weight. And there were that only I could only white knuckle a diet or a human aid solution for a very brief amount of time. I mean, maybe a day or two before I was back in the food. So like I said, I have so many of these photos in my phone. And just, you know, in almost 7 months, I've been able to release 40 pounds just by the grace of God without making weight. Really, like, I focused on my recovery, not on my weight, and it has come off. This is my husband and my daughter at her dance competition this year, and it was just such a different experience because the last year we were at her dance competition, it was all about me and it was all about the food, and it was me bringing my food and restricting, but that only lasted an hour till I was in the food, and then I spent the whole dance competition looking for food. And then I was concerned about how much I ate and my stomach hurt. And there was no room to actually be present for my daughter. And this year I could go with food neutrality and feel as though I can actually be there present and mindful as a parent, which is truly a miracle in itself. So I just wanted to share those photos. I'm going to stop my share. All right. So I did mention before, I did have a very tough childhood. You know, I feel like I have to say it because other people might relate and it's a part of my story. I am a survivor of incest and sexual abuse and a lot of bullying when I was younger. I really didn't have a safe place, but I truly believe that not only was God was there accompanying me and helping me endure my childhood the entire time. And I truly believe that God made me who I am, not despite my childhood, but because of my childhood. You know, God made me sensitive and empathetic and appreciative of the positives in life. And maybe if I didn't go through those trials and tribulations, I wouldn't have appreciated life the way it is now. And just funny enough, this weekend, I learned that after the little serenity prayer that we say, the longer prayer says, like right after the, you know, the part we all share that we said before, it says, living one day at a time, enjoying one moment, accepting hardships as the pathway to peace. So I see my childhood as the hardships that were on my pathway to peace. And what I've learned over, you know, those 7 short months I've been here, that is that pain really is the price of admission in any 12-step program. We completely bond on our weakness and not on our strength. So I'm not here because like I got to the end of the race and rang a bell. You know, I'm not better or worse than anyone else here, but what I have learned is that this 12-step program does not require feeling worthy, because I felt very unworthy. It really requires being willing. And when I finally became willing to address what was going on and use the 12 steps as a way to live life, I finally found a miracle. And if I hadn't, it would have continued, because this disease is permanent, whether or not I'm working recovery or not. It's progressive and it's absolutely fatal if it's not treated. So it is truly a miracle that I'm here. And I had always thought, you know, why am I a compulsive eater? Like the big question of the day, was I eating because I didn't have any other tools? Was I eating because I had a traumatic childhood and I wanted to somehow disassociate from it? Or was I trying to play God because I was so out of control? But honestly, I don't think so. I really believe that I'm a compulsive overeater because I have a phenomenon of craving that afflicts me once I start eating. Alcoholic foods and alcoholic food behaviors just create a phenomenon of craving for me that I cannot stop on my own human age strength. Just as the big book says, we are without defense against that first bite. So really, food for me really wasn't my drug of choice. It was really my drug of no choice. I ate because I'm a compulsive eater. You know, I'm not really a compulsive eater because I ate. Because I didn't turn into a compulsive eater. Like normies, not like me. You know, when they go through a breakup, they eat. When they have a hard day, they might treat themselves to something. That's not me. You know, like Thanksgiving to me would be the beginning of the end. It wouldn't be the one night where I would let myself loose, and it will always be that way. I always say I have an ism and it's never going to be a wasm. So just to quote the big book, it says, we have seen the truth demonstrated again and again. Once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic. Commencing to drink after a period of sobriety, we are in a short time as bad as ever. If we are planning to stop drinking, there must be no reservation of any kind, nor any lurking notion that someday we will be immune to alcohol. And that's the truth. Like I said before, this disease is progressive. And I would use food as my solution and to nurture myself. But unfortunately, it would give me that ease and comfort, but that didn't last long. It, you know, even when I wanted to stop, I couldn't stop. And every morning I would make a promise, as I said before, to my brother. And by the evening I was binging, and it just felt like I was in this jail and the locks were on the inside, not on the outside, because every time I was returning to those alcoholic behaviors or making myself a promise that I couldn't keep to myself, the more I would just be twisting those locks. And I just kept turning the key. And I think I was so imprisoned by fear of the unknown, of wanting this to be a case of self-will, of wanting it to be a case of just not having priorities, that I kept myself locked in that cage. And I just kept getting sicker and sicker. And this is really what the doctor's opinion is all about. It clearly states that this illness is not because I'm lazy, I lack willpower, or a therapist once told me it must not be my priority because I'm not working hard enough at it. But actually, the doctor's opinion clearly states that we have an allergy of the body and the mind. So when I start eating alcoholic foods or I start having alcoholic behaviors like eating in my car or eating while I'm standing up, I have an adverse reaction and a harmful and abnormal reaction that most people don't have. And the more I eat, the more I want. I never understood how people can get, an alcoholic food and get full and throw it out. Like that just blow it still blows my mind. Because as far as my mind goes, I become obsessed and I cannot control my desire to want more and more and more. So going back to my childhood, I started gaining a tremendous amount of weight, not a tremendous, but a good amount of weight. And like I hear all the time in the rooms, my mom brought me to Weight Watchers in sixth grade, and people were really bullying me for my weight gain at school. So I was so proud to show that I had lost weight on Weight Watchers, and people stopped bullying me about my weight. They really couldn't bully me about my weight anymore because I had gotten thin in Weight Watchers. And I just saw then, as a sixth grader still in elementary school, that I can just thrive on acceptance from other people and I can try my best to make myself what they would want me to be. And this took me on a very dark path of wanting especially male attention. I just needed that distraction. And if I was white knuckling myself hard enough to get thinner, I didn't have any other tools of living. So I desperately needed a distraction, and men would be my distraction. It was just this external validation that could temporarily mask like how much pain I was in with the food. And unfortunately, well, I'll just say that I did end up getting married, and my husband, as you saw, he's in the picture earlier. I did get married and I had a baby daughter. And I said, oh my gosh, like this is my opportunity to break the cycle of abuse, and not show my daughter an unhealthy way of living with food. I saw past generations really struggle with food. And I said, oh my goodness, I can show my daughter, what it looks like to have a healthy relationship with food. And so I just started this health journey, which lasted maybe 4 months. And I was white knuckling it, miserable, restless, discontented, irritable, as the big book says. And I didn't know where to turn. And it actually led me into a 3-year affair with a married man because it distracted me enough where I can decide that none of it was my fault, but that I needed a solution, and that solution was going to be male attention. I had a food addiction that requires a miracle, and I had no other tools of living, and I wanted to play God. So that was, I'm not saying every food addict is going to cheat on their husband, but that's just where the throes of this addiction brought me, that I was just so miserable with myself and so discontented. And you know what? Once my husband found out, and obviously he was far from happy with me, I had no reason to keep that food down anymore. I had no reason to give that, sort of feeling of, or, showing people that I can be thin now. I had no reason to just white knuckle the food. And so I went back to food like it was no one's business, gaining a tremendous amount of weight in a very short amount of time. And that caused a lot of health problems. I had pancreatitis. I needed my gallbladder removed. I was in the hospital with heart problems. I had two skin conditions where my skin was just so itchy constantly. And the doctors were saying, like, I mean, talk about step one, your life being unmanageable. My life was unmanageable. And the doctors who were trying to convince me, like, to lose weight, one, they thought food was the problem. They didn't realize it was the solution. And it was all frothy emotional appeal, like that seldom suffices, as the big book says. I couldn't stop. I couldn't get out of that jail that I had made for myself. And so 205 days ago, I came into the rooms, or maybe a little more, maybe 208 days ago, I came into the rooms And I was so desperate and alone, and I felt like I was an alien from outer space coming. And I found a sponsor, and I just said, I couldn't drive my life down any worse than it had gone. So I said, I'm going to do whatever this sponsor tells me to do. And like I said before, I didn't feel the worthiness, but I felt the willingness. And as the big book says, half measures availed us nothing. We stood at the turning point. We asked for his protection and care with complete abandon. And there's no middle of the road solution. So I said, whatever she tells me to do, I'm going to do it. And if she gives me a food plan or she gives me advice and I gain 300 pounds, at least I know that that's not my will. At least I know that I'm doing something someone else is telling me. I'm no longer running the show. And if God wants me to be 900 pounds or 1,000 pounds and you have to cut me out of a room, at least it's not Lindsay running the show anymore. Thank God that didn't happen. But that's how desperate I was, that I had come to this position where I didn't care about weight. I didn't care what I had to do. I had a broken family. I had so many health issues, and I was just completely broken. So that brought me to step one. And as the big book says, at step one, we learned that we had to fully concede to our innermost selves that we were alcoholics. This is the first step. The delusion that we are like other people, or presently maybe, has to be smashed. So I had to admit that my life was unmanageable, that I was powerless over the food. And admitting that in step one was so important to me, because why would I do all this work if I didn't have to? You know, like, why would I want to start making 3 outreach calls a day, committing my food the night before? My husband made all our meals, so I had to really pivot to making all my meals and packaging them up, not going to restaurants at first. There was, you know, doing step work, going to meetings with my camera on. There is so many things she asked of me, but I knew I was powerless at that point. So I was going to do, I mean, if she told me to lay down on the George Washington Bridge in the middle of the night, I probably would have done it. I was that desperate. And then I learned in step two that I get to define my God. My God can be very different than my parents were, or very different than the people who bullied me. God could be someone who may be the only entity where there's nothing I have to do to earn God's love. And there's nothing I have to do that I can do that will take my love away from God. And that was just beautiful. And then for step three, I made a decision to turn my will and my life over to God. And that's just the decision. You know, how we do that is really steps 4 through 12. So I made that decision to turn my will and my life over. And that means everything. That doesn't mean the food. Like, step three doesn't say made a decision to turn our food over to God, although I do that. It's made a decision to turn our will and our lives. That's every moment of my life over to the care of God, because I could no longer trust myself to run the show. I was a bad manager of my own life. And through the steps, I learned that God was saying yes to me all along, even when he was there during my childhood, even when I was in the throes of an affair. God was saying yes to me. It was that I was saying no to him. Like, he needed my yes to make it happen. I learned that as soon as I started to move my feet, God directed my steps, no pun intended. And as long as I was willing to walk, God was willing to run to me. And I just think now, like, what if I kept saying no to God's yes? I wouldn't be sitting here with you 205 days later sharing this message of hope and recovery. I would still be miserable and still in that jail, twisting those locks. So I really needed to open the door and just let God in, because God was knocking and I just kept slamming that door shut. And I was slamming that door shut with lies, tons of self-pity, wanting external validation, food. Like, it didn't matter how many times God knocked, or how loud God knocked, I just kept slamming the door. And what I learned is that, and this I think is so valuable, what I learned is that once I brought God into my life, it wasn't his job to get rid of my troubles. That's what I thought at first, that God would come in and be this firefighter that was going to extinguish all my troubles. But God was there to help me rise to the occasion of my troubles. God wasn't there to change my circumstances, but to change me so I can grow and I can learn the tolerance and love I needed to rise myself up to meet those challenges. God being the firefighter I was hoping for, he didn't make my husband happy with what I did, or fix my health problems immediately, or stop traffic for me, or make my daughter less stressful. But he changed the way I was able to handle it and how I learned to sweep my side of the street and worry about my own defects of character and learn how to make amends for the things I've done and learn how to find self-love. Because of God, I was able to let my character come up higher. He wasn't a Santa Claus God like I used to think he would. He was that I used to think he was.
20 minutes.
Oh wow, that went fast. Thank you. Okay. Something that I love is that I don't have to carry anything anymore. I mean, I was carrying so much. I was carrying the weight of the world, the weight of my childhood, the weight of my own child. And God's already carrying it. And now I have a beautiful, loving relationship with God. I learned a quote that said, "Prayer is the most highly accelerated mind action known." And I would have thought 205 days ago that that was total bullshit. Because to me, I would look up to God, say a few words, when I was in traffic and late for work, like, "God, please let me get to work in time so my boss doesn't kill me." And that is not God. I mean, that is God, and that's great, but that was not how I can connect with God. I learned that I have a daily reprieve that's contingent on a spiritual condition. And so my spiritual condition has been turning to God when I feel like it, when I don't feel like it, turning to God in the mornings, asking God for help to navigate the day or help making a decision. All relationships take time. And so my relationship with God did take a little time, and it still continues to evolve. But no one and nothing can stand in my way if I'm living a God-driven life, because I know that I'm working the best to live up to what I feel God's expectations of me are. And if I try my best and do an inventory and, seek God's help, that's the best I can do. And I no longer need to have this image management all the time, or seek validation, or want others to like me, because I know God loves me and I know I'm trying my best, and that's all I can do. I used to just spend my days lying, assigning blame to others, keeping score of what everyone else was doing, being so self-seeking. And now I go into a situation thinking, how can I be helpful? How can I live how God would want me to live? And I pray to God to be willing, because I'm not always willing to do that. And so sometimes I pray, like, God, just please let me will be willing to be helpful. Because we're spiritual beings, but I'm a spiritual being. I could talk about myself, and I'm having a very human experience. So there are still times I get very frustrated or I get aggravated, and I just turn to God and I pause. I just want to share some thoughts for newcomers, because I don't want to run out of time before I do. As I said, when I came in, I was so broken and I was so scared. And it's like you would have dropped me off, in the middle of the Sahara Desert with no map. I just want to share some things that work for me as a newcomer. One, I learned that not everyone is going to understand. Like, this is just food. Have a little. It's your birthday. Not everyone is like us. Not everyone's going to understand it. My sponsor always said, like, take a sheet of paper, fold it in half. Everyone else is on one side, and I'm on the other side. I recognize I'm not like everyone else. I was out to dinner tonight, and I saw people ordering, trying each other's, having fun. That's great. I can't do that and live a God-driven life and have sanity. So not everyone is going to understand, and it's not our job to convince everyone. I wrote all the ways I was affected because I do have the propensity to forget and to think I can be in control after just a few days of white knuckling. So I just wrote, I made columns. I wrote the physical, the social, the emotional, and the spiritual ways that I had really just was suffering. And I look at those from time to time when I want to say, oh, I think I got this now. You know, I'll look at that and remind myself how bad it was. At the very beginning, I thought it was very important to avoid temptation. Now, through the steps, thank God I have food neutrality one day at a time. But I don't think any of us would send an alcoholic into a bar their first few days of recovery. And I also avoided restaurants until I was through the steps. I learned to stop making the scale my higher power. That came very quickly, but I still talk to a lot of fellows who are asking me about my weight and did I go on the scale this much? And like when we focus on recovery, we lose the weight. When we focus on the weight, we lose our recovery. And the scale just went away for me. I had to stop making so many things my higher power, and especially the scale. I had to food prep. You know, if you fail to plan, you plan to fail. I had to food prep. Now things are easier and I'm getting in the, like, you know, I could sort of know what my day is going to look like and get back in the fold. But when I first started, I was food prepping the night before for the next day, always knew I had my food so I wouldn't stop, get find myself in a rut. I made a list of
25 minutes.
Thank you. I made a list of everything I can do instead of turning to food because those first few days, like, we don't have a miracle yet. So we are white knuckling it for those first few days, or I was white knuckling it. So I just made a list of things I can do instead of turning to food. And I posted it everywhere. And I took showers because there's not usually much food in the shower. And I just avoided and I just prayed. And I just kept telling myself, Lindsay, just get to the bed. If you can get to the bed tonight, you'll wake up tomorrow feeling better. And just another tidbit for newcomers, just remembering that, like, I am 100% responsible for my recovery. And I don't want to give that power to anyone else. Yes, I need a power from God, but I'm 100% responsible to turn to God and to make those outreach calls and to ask God for the willingness and to food prep. I can't blame circumstances or people or anything else for not doing what my sponsor says. Like, it does take will and it takes our human aid power to learn the steps, to do what we're told, and to receive that power. And every day it continues to take my will. When I wake up every day, it's like I was Cinderella at the ball last night, feeling like really great, feeling all recovered and zen. But I wake up like, oh, fuck, it's another day. Like, oh, I gotta get to work. I gotta get my daughter ready for school, you know? And I take those 30 minutes to get on my knees, to thank God for another day, and to recalibrate my brain so that it's ready to be helpful and loving to others. And that's self-will, you know? That first moment where I drop to my knees, that is all me, myself, and I. And if I, and once I do that, I get the power of God. And so I'm just trying to think if there was anything else. The other thing was just to celebrate small victories. Like, yes, I made it through a day. I made an outreach call. I got to a meeting and left my camera on. Those are all such hard things at the beginning. And it's just so beautiful to not beat ourselves up and to just be so proud of ourselves. And, you know, throughout these 12 steps, I've learned to trust God. I've cleaned house very rigorously. And I'm focused on helping others. And you know, that's the program in a nutshell: trusting God, cleaning house, and helping others. And when I live life like that, I get to live life and not avoid life by turning to the food. And that's a miracle. So I, you know, encourage everyone to get their big book. I have mine all, you know, written up, written through. And I'm just so grateful that I can be here to share the message. And thank you for letting me talk for so long. And with that, I'll pass.
Thank you so much, Lindsay, for your beautiful share.